When I was 7 years old, Walt Disney's Sleeping Beauty came out in movie theaters. I'd hated the fairy tale when I first heard it when I was very young, but the Disney version was different, mostly because of Aurora's woodland friends. I explain why I still love the Disney version on my blog, but as lovely as Disney's Sleeping Beauty was for me, it was a treasure of childhood, not adulthood. I became a birder in 1975, and the real birds I could look at in my field guides and see in the flesh whenever I was outside easily and entirely displaced those generic Disney birds. The only identifiable bird in Sleeping Beauty was the great horned owl, a friendly creature who frolicked with rabbits, squirrels, and other forest animals rather than hunting and eating them. That peaceable kingdom view was fine for a 7-year-old, and even as an adult, I can suspend disbelief to enjoy the movie, but I prefer my own backyard cottontails and gray squirrels to be wary and safe. The other birds in Sleeping Beauty are too generic to be recognizable, but not the owl. I'll never forget seeing my first real great horned owl on January 15, 1976, in Baker Woodlot, the exact same forest where I'd seen my first chickadee less than a year before. It was the morning after a blizzard, some branches still topped with fresh snow, the frozen air not just bracing, but biting. That was the winter when I discovered that trees moan and creak with cold, wonderful sounds I'd never paid attention to or maybe even heard before I started spending so much time outside searching for birds. Until I became a birder, as much as I loved being outdoors, my joy was diffuse and misty, like a baby cooing at colors and patterns before they resolve into specific objects, or like a 7-year-old whose eyes were ever so pleased by the vague shapes of a Disney forest, no identifiable or realistic trees whatsoever. On this January morning, I was in my element, all my senses reveling in this real-life winter forest, and then there it was, that honest-to-goodness owl, looking down at me from a tall snag, so unspeakably beautiful, so unmistakable, so specific, not just a lifer, but a warm, alive individual looking directly into my eyes, that I started to cry. I didn't know at the time that crows mob great horned owls, so I didn't realize that this bird would stay put as long as it possibly could, maybe even all day, if crows didn't notice. I stood agape for 5 or 10 minutes watching it. It would occasionally open its eyes to look into mine, but then would close its thick, feathered eyelids as if it were getting bored or felt comfortable despite my presence. Another thing I didn't realize at the time was that those eyelids weren't entirely closed. Unlike most birds, but just like us humans, the upper eyelid on owls is the larger one. Our vision gets smushy when we partly close our own eyes, but owls can see the ground perfectly clearly when their upper eyelid is mostly closed. That owl was keeping track of me even as it appeared to doze. As arresting as seeing and drinking in every detail of my first great horned owl was, it was cold out there. And eventually I moved on. I didn't think of Sleeping Beauty once during the encounter. Reality was too perfect and too consuming to conjure fantasy. But the next year, I had a real-life experience with a bird that was so much like the woodland scene in Sleeping Beauty that it still seems more Disney-esque than real. Tomorrow, I'll tell you about my once-upon-a-dream bird. I'm Laura Erickson, speaking for the birds. Mm-hmm.